Fenn and the Shilluk camp followers swept out one of the largest huts for Merrin. Then Fenn burnt a handful of Taita's special herbs in the open fireplace. The aromatic smoke drove out the insects and spiders that had made the hut their home. They cut a mattress of fresh grass and laid Merrin's sleeping mat upon it. He was in such pain that he could hardly raise his head to drink from the bowl that Fenn held to his lips. Taita promoted Hiltobar Hilto to take his place at the head of the four divisions until Merrin had recovered sufficiently to assume command again. Taita and Hilto toured the town to inspect the defences. Their first concern was to ensure that the water supply was secure. There was a deep well in the centre of the village, with a narrow circular clay staircase descending to the water, which was of good quality. Taita ordered that a party under Shofar should fill all of the gourds and water skins in readiness for the anticipated assault by the Basmara. In the thick of the fighting, thirsty men would have no opportunity to draw from the well. Taita's next concern was the condition of the outer stockade. They found that it was still in a reasonable state of repair, except for a few sections where termites had eaten the poles. However, it was immediately apparent that they could not hope to hold such an extended line. Tamafupa was a big town that had once been home to a large tribe. The stockade was almost half a league in circumference. "We'll have to shorten it," he told Hilto, "then burn the remainder of the town to clear the approaches and enable our archers to cover the ground."
"You have set us a daunting task, Magus," Hilto remarked. "We had better begin at once."
Once Taita had marked out the new perimeter, men and women fell to. They dug out the best preserved of the stockade poles and set them up along the line Taita had surveyed. There was no time to make a permanent fortification, so they filled the gaps with branches of kitar thornbush. They erected tall watchtowers at the four compass points of the new stockade, which commanded a good view over the valley and all the approaches. Taita ordered bonfires to be set around the perimeter. When they were lit, they would illuminate the stockade walls in the event of a night attack. Once this was done, he built an inner keep round the well, their last line of defence if the Basmara regiments broke into the town. Within this inner stronghold, he stored the remaining bags of durra, the spare weapons and all other valuable supplies. They built stables for the remaining horses. Windsmoke and her colt were still in good condition, but many others were sick or dying after the long, hard road they had travelled. Every evening after she had fed Merrin and helped Taita change the dressing over the empty socket of his right eye, Fenn went down to visit Whirlwind and take him the durra cakes he loved. Taita waited for a favourable wind before he set fire to the remains of the old town that lay outside the new stockade. The thatch and wooden walls had dried and burned rapidly, the wind blowing the flames away from the new walls. By nightfall, that day, the old town was levelled to a smouldering field of ashes. "Let the Basmara attack across that open ground," Hilto observed, with satisfaction, "and we'll shock them." "Now you can set up markers in front of the stockade," Data told him. They placed cairns of white river stones at 20, 50, and 100 paces so that the archers could have the enemy accurately ranged as they sent in their attacks. Taita sent Imbali with her companions and the other women to the dry river to cut reeds for arrow-making. He had brought bags of spare arrowheads from the armory at Kibui Fort, and when they had been used, he discovered an outcrop of flint in the hillside below the stockade. He showed the women how to chip the flint fragments into arrowheads. They learnt the skill quickly, then bound the heads into the reed shafts with bark twine and soaked them in water to make them tight and hard. They stacked bundles of spare arrows at salient points along the perimeter of the stockade. Within 10 days, all of the preparation had been completed. The men and Imbali's women sharpened their weapons and checked their equipment for what might be the last time. One evening, as the men gathered around the fires for the evening meal, there was a sudden stir and burst of cheering as an ill-assorted couple came into the firelight. Merrin was unsteady on his feet, but supported himself with a hand on Fenn's shoulder as he came to where Taita sat with the captains. They all jumped to their feet and crowded round him, laughing and congratulating him on his swift recovery. A linen bandage covered his empty eye socket, and he was pale and thinner,
but he was making an effort to walk with something of his old swagger, and countered the sallies of the officers with ribald riposts. At last he stood before Taita and saluted him. "Ho, Merin, bored with lying abed to be tended by all the females in the camp?" Taita had spoken with a smile, but he had difficulty in repressing the pang he felt when he saw the calloused warrior's hand on Fenn's dainty shoulder. He knew that his jealousy would become keener as her body and beauty matured. He had experienced that corrosive emotion during her other life.